Everybody, welcome back. Glad you're with us. We are learning about jQuery on this Microsoft Virtual Academy course. And like I said, really glad you're here. This is a fun topic. It's one that should have happened years ago. jQuery is a core tenant of the web platform. And now here it is. So we're kind of expecting that you are perhaps near the beginning of your career in web platform development, but you may be well on and just been a little bit sheltered and haven't seen jQuery yet, but anyway, hopefully you're learning something. Hopefully you're going to use jQuery here and there, and this will help you to just kind of figure out where it fits and what to use it for. There was the module just before our break. We had a little snafu that I believe Rachel wanted to address.
Yeah, I'll just blame it on a lack of sleep. So, I was trying to add a class to the has class, which just tells you if you have a class or not. So if we wanted to do something like that, we can do add class and remove class. So I actually have the better example, which is just taking my paragraph selector, add class, and then remove class, rather than just checking. Now, if I have a has class, I could do has class and then call a function, do an inline function, and then do these. But if I run these, this should be fine, and there we go. It actually changes the classes. It gets rid of one and removes another. So just a little syntax blurb there.
Funny thing about jQuery is that since practically everything is chained, when something doesn't chain, it might catch you by surprise.
Yes, that's basically it. That's basically what happened.
So thanks to everybody in the chat room who put in your correct answers. All right, so we're going to continue learning about jQuery. And I'll just go ahead and jump back to the agenda slide here and show you where we're at in the day. We've done modules 1, 2, and 3, an introduction to jQuery, the concepts of selecting things in your jQuery, and then the concept of manipulating what it is that you've selected, their core concepts. And now we're going to be moving into modules 4, 5, 6, and 7, which are really quite disparate. They don't necessarily affect each other. They don't build on each other quite as much. Although they all do build on the concepts that you learned in modules 1 and 2. So 2 and 3. So if you missed those modules, you may want to review those before you move into modules 4, 5, 6, and then 7 is just altogether different. That's mostly just a discussion around the library space around jQuery. So right now we're going to be breaking into module 4 and talking about events. Now, events are absolutely core to not necessarily just jQuery, but to web development overall, and probably even bigger than that. I mean, in most languages, you have some sort of an event model, which is basically just an opportunity in time to kind of pause and say, hey, developer, something just happened that you might need to be aware of and give us as a developer an opportunity to write some code at that point in time. The user just clicked specifically on this, they just typed in some text, they just navigated from here to there, whatever. A certain event or a certain point in time has been reached, and you have the opportunity to write some code right there. Now, events are obviously built right into JavaScript, and with no jQuery whatsoever, you can definitely do all your eventing. This is really just a matter of ease. Okay, there is some functionality that feels like you certainly wouldn't want to try to do that with just JavaScript because it would be hard. jQuery makes it that much easier, but technically everything that gets done in jQuery in general can be done in just JavaScript because it is just a JavaScript library, okay? So let's take a look at what we're going to be reviewing in this module. First, we're going to look at the concept of attaching events. In other words, how do I determine which functions run whenever a certain event occurs and vice versa. And in jQuery, we're given this object called the event object that really matters for when you're attaching to events. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to break down all the various types of events. And I'm going to focus on the ones that are the most important. So we've got browser events that occur for the kind of the life cycle or the events that that affect the user's browser, the actual user agent that they're using. So we're talking Internet Explorer or Chrome or whatever they're using on their machine. And it might not be just a browser. It might just be a user agent. So it might be something that's embedded or who knows. But these events are going to occur and pertain to that. The document loading events, we've already referenced some of these. The document loading happens when a user first gets to your page. It has to go do a request, pull back some information, and probably go and do more requests these days and pull back even more information. And we call that the page load lifecycle. And there are certain points in time within that page load that you want to capture and do things. Like maybe just after all of the DOM has been fleshed out, you want to go do something to manipulate that DOM. Or maybe just after your image gets loaded, you want to do something to resize or make that image fit better. So that's what the document loading events are for. We're going to talk about form events that happen for any web forms that you have on your page. So when users type into text boxes or click buttons, things like that. Then we're going to talk about keyboard events and mouse events. Those are kind of the easiest ones. Everybody's super familiar with the concept of clicking their mouse somewhere on the screen or touching a key on the keyboard. It's really easy to make that mental leap over into what exactly an event is and why you would want to capture it. Okay, so let's start with the attachment process and the event object. Now, I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this slide, because this is interesting. Hopefully you remember when we were talking about the version history of jQuery that at one point in time, and I'm forgetting, but I believe it's 1.7, I think it's 1.7, the event model was kind of turned on its head in jQuery, and they basically said, well, we'll still support bind and delegate and one and live and all of these, but let's create one method to rule them all. Let's create on and off and just kind of wrap up all of these possibly confusing options for tying up events. So we have these two events that become the most important, on and off. And by and large, on is the most important. Sometimes you can just count on the death of the page to kill your event handlers. Yeah, you may want to be more explicit about that. Just make sure that you don't run into memory leaks, but by and large, on is the most popular method here, so it really would be deserving of our time to discuss what exactly the on method does. I think it'll help to understand the on method, however, if I mention what it is that the other ones do. So before we had on, bind and live were the most popular events. And there was really a time to use bind and a time to use live. And bind, for the most part, was used to just tie up an event, and you know exactly which element you're concerned with. I'm concerned with the mouse button, or I'm concerned with this form field, or whatever. And so you're going to go ahead and bind a function to run whenever that thing occurs. Now, live is something that you would use whenever, for instance, you were going to be, because oftentimes with jQuery, you're dynamically manipulating the DOM and you're going to be adding a bunch of stuff into it. And with live, it was able to move that function handler up into higher, actually it would move them all the way up to the page, up to the window. So it would capture everything that happens and then just determine which event was actually clicked on. And by using that trick, it was able to make it such that whenever you add new elements to your DOM programmatically, this whatever you tie up using live will affect even the ones that you haven't added yet. So we'll take a look at all that right now. And then we're going to look at trigger and trigger handler, but those are pretty simple. So I'm going to take you to this demo. This is in my code pen. So if you're already on my code pen, you should just be able to find it. It has the name event attachment. So if you go to my code pen, I'll just show you this once. If you go to my code pen, there is a collection for all of the code pens that I'm showing for this MVA. It's called Introduction to jQuery, of course. And if you go to it and hover over these, it'll show you the method. It'll show you the name, rather, of that pen. And there are multiple pages of this. Okay, so I'm going to take you into this one here. And we're going to take a look at what it looks like to tie up these things. Now, I'll give you a little intro to the HTML and the CSS that I have written here, but then I'm going to close some panes to give myself some more space. So in my HTML, you see that I have a div called parent, and it has three divs that are each a child, okay? Now I'm using this is an HTML5 concept that we're not really diving into, but Rachel mentioned it earlier. I've got a data dash attribute on here, meaning that I can give this whatever I want, whatever value I want, and I'm just giving it these fancy names called child1, child2, child3, and then we're gonna have an opportunity to see how we would select based on those names. Okay, so I've got these three children, and then I've got two buttons. You can see that those over here. Turn them off and trigger on child3. I'll show you about that in a second. So let me go ahead and collapse this HTML. The CSS basically just draws my lines and lays things out, so I'm gonna close that, and we're gonna just look at the JavaScript. Okay, so first thing I wanna do is show you the functionality here. I'm gonna need to open my console in order to see the results here. Now, when you open your console, it opens to the debugger. I like to go right to the console, and when you see this access is denied, that's something that you're just gonna get when you're looking at the console for CodePen, so I like to just kill that, and now I'm ready to go. Okay, so now I'm gonna click on this one child, and you can see that in my console it says child1 down here, okay? This child1 was written to the console because in my JavaScript I said console.log. So you can imagine if somebody's actually browsing this page, they don't see that. They don't see that unless they open some developer tools and they look at the console, okay? But it's really helpful for us when we're debugging. So I've got this console log, it's saying child1 when I clicked on child1. Well, how did that happen? You can guess what's gonna happen when I click on child2, right? Child2 appears. So how did that happen? Well, let's go over here and look at my jQuery, and I start with a selector. You should be masters at selectors now because Rachel just walked you all the way through them. This selector is simply the word div, and that means that if you just use a alphanumeric value and you don't have any symbols before it, we're not selecting by ID, we're not selecting by class, we're selecting by the tag name. So we're saying div. Now, how many divs do I have on this screen? I've got lots of divs, right? I've put multiple divs. Let's go ahead and go back to the HTML and look at this. There's a div, and there's one, and there's one, and there's one, and then the rest are buttons. So I have four divs on this page. Kill that HTML pane again. Now remember, like Rachel said, when you select and you use a value that matches more than one element, all of those elements are returned to you. We now have a jQuery object that's wrapping four divs because all four of those elements matched my selector. Okay, now once I have done a selection, here we are, I'm gonna add whatever manipulating functions I want onto this jQuery object, and here I'm gonna add the on method, okay? This could be changed so you could select your divs, manipulate them, do something to them, change their color, and then tie up an event handler. You could do all of that in one chain if you wanted. Here, the first and only thing I'm doing on this jQuery object is I'm saying on. Now on, if we go to the jQuery documentation, and you'll go here all the time, API documentation, all of this stuff is gonna be found under the events, and this specifically is gonna be found under the event handler, what was it called? Event handler attachment. So this is showing kind of all of the deprecated ones. You can see that here, live is deprecated as of 1.7. It gives you all of that information. I'm gonna jump right into the on and just show you just one time what it is that they're expecting. So on is expecting the events. This is the event or events that I want to attach to. And then I optionally can add a selector, some data, and then I need to give it the handler. The handler is a function. So the two things that are required, and for the most part, the two things that you'll use probably the most often are the event or events that you want to tie to and the function that you want to handle that. So this is really just a mapping between something that's inevitably going to happen and some functionality, some function that you want to occur at that point in time. So let's go back and look at our code. And we're saying on click, now notice that's a string, and I'm saying on click, whenever the element in question is clicked on, I want this function to fire. And when that function fires, the event arguments are going to be passed in to that function, and I can receive those by declaring a named parameter there, EV. So that's why I'm able in my console log to refer to EV and get this current target. And we'll refer to everything that's available to you there soon. This current target represents the DOM object that I got that I clicked on. Dataset represents all of the data dash tags. And I said specifically I'm looking for the data dash tag that is data dash name. So I'm using the word name here. So here I'm logging it to the console. And then kind of an interesting thing I'm doing here second. I'm stopping the propagation, all right? That doesn't make sense to you at first, perhaps, but I'm going to stop the propagation or the bubbling up of this event. And so it's only going to be fired one, it's only going to be handled one time, even if I'm tying this function up to multiple nested divs. So when I click on child 3, it says child 3 just one time down here. It only says it one time. So let's go ahead and take off that propagation. I'll just comment this out. And then I'm going to run this again. And then I'm going to click on child 3, and you'll see that I get both child 3 and parent. Now what happened is this. The nature of events in JavaScript is such that whenever an event occurs on a given element, it may or may not affect the elements above it, and it may or may not get bubbled up to the events above it. Now you can see that I have child 3 inside of its parent. And so when I click on child 3, I ask you this. Have I clicked on child 3 or have I clicked on its parent?
Well, the answer is,
the answer is kind of yes, right? I mean, you have clicked on child 3 specifically, but you've also clicked on its parent.
Right.
And what if its parent was saying, hey, I need to know about when people click on me? And the child 3 is saying, well, I also need to know about when people click on me. So when somebody clicks on the intersection of the two things that are nested, both of them need to know about it, and that's why we have event handling. So when I click on child 3, if I wanted to take the time to set some breakpoints, you could see that I'm actually going to trigger this same exact function two different times. First, I'm going to trigger it on child 3, and then that event is going to get bubbled up to the parent, and the parent's going to say, oh yeah, I care about that one. And so it's going to handle it as well. And that's why we see child 3 and then parent down here in the console. We see both of those. But you do have the opportunity to say, you know what? Nobody above me should handle this now that I have. So you can say, stop this propagation, and it'll stop it from going up. So now, when I click, let me go ahead and clear my console. When I click on 3, only 3 occurs and nothing above it. But I have successfully done something very simple here, and that is tied together the click event with my function of things I want to happen whenever that fires. Not too terribly difficult. Now that's the on. The opposite of on is, anybody got any guesses?
Oh, let me think.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
How about
off,
our camera guys?
Maybe?
Close.
Never mind,
close.
She already got it. Yeah, close. No, no. Down. No, no. The opposite of on is off. And we are basically going to be turning off event handlers at this point. We're not turning off the fact that events are firing. We're just saying we don't want to do anything when they fire anymore. We're going to cut the tie. We're going to break the map.
For a specific event.
For a specific event or events. Yeah, absolutely. So in this case, when I tied this up, I said, hey, every div on my page. And now whenever the user clicks this turn them off button, I want to handle that and I want to turn off all of them. So let's break this down. First thing I have to do is I have to handle the click event when somebody clicks on my button, right? Because this is happening when a user does something. So this is how I use the jQuery selectors to find that specific button. I gave it an ID of turn them off. And so I just say, turn them off, just like that. Now, I believe you mentioned before that behind the scenes you could use getElementById instead of something like the jQuery method. And I think that in this case, I'm guessing it's probably going to use getElementById. Is that right?
They usually do.
Yeah. So they're trying to be very, very optimized so that even when you use the easy way, they go behind the scenes and they use the very performant way
right.
of doing that, if they can.
That's what makes it so great.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes it really good. So this finds my button here. On says I'm getting ready to tie up an event. Now, remember, I want this to happen right away when my page comes up, like as soon as my DOM is ready. I want that tie-up to be done. You could programmatically tie up events later in the lifecycle, but oftentimes, if you want from the beginning, for instance, for that button to be clickable, you want to tie that up right away. So we're tying up the click event to a custom function. And that function is very easy. It just says, once again, find all the divs on the page. Whoops. Find all the divs on the page and cut the ties. Don't handle any of the events for those divs on the page. Now, that'll remove all of them. I could also say more specifically, like if I was also handling some other events, I could say, actually, just untie or turn off the click events for all the divs on the page. That might be safer, because then inevitably somebody else will come into this code, they'll tie up an event, it won't be working, and they'll be, why in the world is this not working? And it's because you at some point explicitly came in and said, turn off all the events for this element, and that'll drive them mad. Okay, so that's how to turn them off, that's how to turn them on. Now, I told you that the live events, and let me just jump back to my slide on that. The live and die events here, the whole reason to create those was so that you could still do dynamic DOM manipulations, and the things that you hadn't added yet, you don't have to do the busy work of going back and tying up more stuff. All of the stuff that matched that selector now and into the future is going to match. So that's really handy, right? Well, the on gives that to you as well. So I'm not gonna break into that. It's a little bit longer demo, but you do have the ability to, for instance, say, for all divs on the page, and now, voila, dynamically we add another div to the page. Does that one count? It sure does. Yep. On is going to tie that one up for us. Yep. What's your pattern, Rachel? What do you normally use here? Have you adopted always using on, or do you still use bind and live and all that?
Well, I tend to fall back to bind a lot. And there's other languages use bind as well. Yeah. So I just tend to do that. But lately I've been doing more on and off because that's the proper way to do it, not deprecated like the older ones.
Yeah, right. Okay, cool. Well, let's look at some more events here. So I showed you that whenever your event actually fires, you have an opportunity to name a parameter, and then you get that parameter. Actually, you get it either way, but if you give it a name, you get an easy way to handle it. That's just kind of a JavaScript nuance. So if you give it this name, EV is what we've been using. I'll go ahead and show you the code there again. We give it this name EV, which means, and I should show you the higher one because I'm actually using it. Once I've given it that name, I'm then able to use it inside my function. Well, what is that thing? Let's actually console log the EV itself and see what that is. So I'm going to run this. And you should see when I click on something now that I not only get the name of that thing, but I get this object. Well, this object that's given to me is a jQuery object. It's not the jQuery object, like the one that we can chain and everything. It's a different one. It's the event object. So there are a few other objects in jQuery besides the main jQuery object. This is one of them. This is an event object. And it gives you a few things that you probably want to concern yourself with. It gives us the current target property. So if I go back to here and I look for current target, I should find that. And there it is, current target. Now, remember how I told you that these events can be nested? The elements are nested and the events will bubble up. Well, if I have 10 levels deep, whole bunch of nested divs, and somebody clicks on the very deepest one, I'm actually going to get that event firing 10 times, right? It's going to fire first on the deepest thing, and it's going to bubble all the way up to the highest level container.
Yeah.
So in your event handler, you probably want to know, like, which element are we talking about here? Was it the lowest one or the highest one or somewhere in between?
Right, because you don't want it firing off for all those 10. A, that's a big performance problem.
Sure.
B, that's just a spaghetti problem at that point as well.
Yeah, but it's just oftentimes inside of an event, you need to know which thing are we talking about here that got clicked on or focused on or whatever, and that's what current target is for.
Right, and in a regular, like just pure JavaScript, this would be called your source event or SRC event. So you would actually directly access that, which is what it's just doing behind the scenes.
Yeah. SRC element.
SRC element.
Yeah. Starts with E. You get the type. Let's go ahead and look back here at type, and this is small. I'm going to make it large. That's what we do. So here we go. Type, click. It's telling us what kind of an event that was. That's helpful. We may have multiple events tied up to this thing, and we want to do some switching and figure out what those are. The next thing that it gives us is which. Now which, let's go look at the value there. Which says one. And
which one?
Which one? Not only is that funny, but also funny is the fact that I forgot what which is for. So let's just go look it up. Actually, this is a perfect time to illustrate, you know, the fact that oftentimes you want to go to jQuery.com and go to your API documentation and look this stuff up. So I didn't really forget what which stands for. No. I just wanted to show you how to do this. Okay. Yeah. It's a pedagogical strategy is what it is.
Well, it's easy to forget. There are so many different things with jQuery and then all these other accompanying technologies. It's impossible to memorize them all. That's why we have documentation.
Why we have documentation?
Why not use it?
Oh, there it is.
There
I forgot.
It is.
Okay. So, So I went to the jQuery documentation. I looked up the event object. Event.which is, if you are pressing a key or hitting a button, it's which one. So this was a one because I left-clicked on it. Let's actually practice this here. Let's right-click on child two. Oh, you know what? The right-click is handled by the browser. You can change that, but by default it is. So I found that if I middle-click on here, it gives me an object, and I kind of have to do it again because otherwise I get it obstructed. And now let's go down to which. Ah, and look at that. Now it's the value is two. So that's because I hit the middle mouse button on my mouse. Just likewise, if you were using the keyboard, that would be telling you which key was actually struck. Whew. Okay, so we looked at current target, type, which. Let's look at the timestamp. This timestamp is exactly what time. This is milliseconds since 1970. I think this is the way it's done. This is when that thing was actually clicked on. If you're doing some interesting coordination, and you've got multiple events, it may just be that you need to compare them with each other and see when they were fired, or make some determining factors based on when they were fired. How about the target? You also get the target. This is that DOM element. There are subtle differences between the target and the current target, and I won't elaborate. And there's also the data. Now, whenever you cause an event to fire, you have an opportunity. We saw this in the on. Here in the on, in between here, you could put some data. So you could say whenever they click on it, I want to pass in the, I'll just say parameter one, P1, and the value is hello. I'm passing that in now as data. And whenever this occurs, now that data is going to include that. So let me run my pen. And then let me middle click on child three, or left click, whichever. And did I get, let me clear this out and try again. There it is. And now we'll go look at the, remind me which one I was looking at? Data. We'll go look at the data. And it's not expanding for me for some reason. But this data is that object that I passed in. So you as the developer have an opportunity to pass for yourself some data that you want to uniquely define that event or that event occurrence or something like that. You ever use that?
Yeah, once in a while. That extra data, it's kind of handy. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so we've looked at tying up these events so that when they occur naturally, like when the user clicks on the button, we handle that, right? Well, there are times when you want to programmatically act as if the user just clicked on that button, even though they didn't. And it's an interesting scenario because you're kind of, at this point, you're emulating user behavior. You're taking advantage of the fact that you may have already tied up multiple functions on a click handler. So maybe you've already got it set such that when a user clicks on your button, five things happen, right? Well, now, what if you just want to programmatically act like that happened and call those five things. You could either go call those five things, or I guess you could wrap them in a function. That might not be a bad idea. But you could also just act like the click just happened, right? And all of the things that come with it, the validation of the input, the firing of those events, everything that comes with it. So now I've just manually put a button here on this pen that says trigger on child three. And what that's gonna do, let me go ahead and clear this out again. That's going to act exactly as if I had just clicked on this three. The same exact thing happens if I click on three or if I say trigger on three. And let's see how I did that. So I tied up to this trigger it button. That's this button here. And I said on click, so whenever the user clicks this, here's a function that I want to tie up. And then I have the opportunity here to look for a specific element. And I have identified that element using the attribute selector that Rachel talked about. So I have divs, but I have four divs on the screen, right? I'm only interested in the one that has the data-name of child three in quotes. So that's gonna find me that specific one. Once I've found it, I get to call trigger, and this should all be on one line. It would be easier to read if this was on one line. I'm calling trigger, and I'm passing in the click. In other words, I'm saying I want the click to occur on this element. And that just happens as exactly as if the user had actually done it themselves. Okay, so that is that's it for the event object. Just know that for all the events that you run, you have the opportunity to access this event object and hook into any of these parameters or methods. Okay, so we looked at the demo for that already. Next, we're gonna look at browser events. Now, as I told you, browser events have to do with the actual web browser that they're using, and it's really great that in our JavaScript, we get to interact not only with the document and the document's body and all of the elements on it, but we get to programmatically access the browser itself. We get to control some behavior around the user's browser. So let's see what I'm talking about. Primarily, this is three events: error, resize, and scroll, okay? Error is gonna happen at a very high level. If there's any errors that happen in your code, it's gonna bubble up to the top and it's gonna be caught by this browser error event. Resize is gonna happen if for any reason the size of the user's window changes. That means they maximized it, restored it, snapped it to the one side of the screen or the other, grabbed a corner and dragged it, plugged in a new monitor and moved it onto a larger screen. If for whatever reason that browser changes in size, this one's gonna fire and allow you to create a very reactive UI. Programmatically, of course, if you have the ability to create a reactive UI using CSS or CSS framework, that's great. But if you need really low level control, you can do that right here in your jQuery. The third browser event is the scroll. So whenever the user scrolls, and this is gonna affect the browser. So it's gonna be on the window object, but the scroll event is actually available for elements as well. So whether it's the whole page that's scrolling or just one div on the page that's scrolling, you're gonna be able to access those. So let's go ahead and look at another demo. So for this demo, we're going to go back to my pen in the same collection, and we're gonna go to the demo with the name browser events in case you wanna follow along. You can see that we have a pretty simple DOM here. We've got a button, we've got a div with the ID of cheeseburger, and then we have a whole bunch of information about cheeseburgers. I meant to put this one right before lunch, just to tease everybody, but anyway.
You like cheeseburgers.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of text. Wikipedia likes cheeseburgers. There's a lot of text about it. Okay, so that's all we've got. You can pretty much see it over here, so let's just go ahead and collapse that. For the CSS, I'm setting this to 200 pixels wide, so that's why we have this width of this pane here. That's 200 pixels wide. The height is 1200 pixels, so I'm purposefully making this go off screen. Okay, that's going, how do I do an arrow? Off screen, there we go. Finally.
It's going all over.
It's going off screen here. And I also have a border around it just so that it's more visible. And I have said that I want the overflow Y to be scroll. What does that mean?
That's kind of important. So the overflow lets you determine how text flows outside of the block or if it kind of tucks it in. And so if you set overflow to scroll, then it makes it so that you can start scrolling and then respond to that scroll event.
Cool, yeah, so it's gonna absolutely put that there. And you can see that because this block is 1200, I have to scroll not only my page, but I also have to scroll this because I've hard-coded that. This is terrible UI, by the way.
I was just gonna interject with that. I see this a lot on a lot of popular websites, and you have to scroll and then you have to inter-scroll.
Yeah.
And technical folks like us could probably deal with that. Have you seen my Aunt Betty trying to use this? It's not, you know, and Uncle Harry, they're just like not at all, right? Can't scroll. And UX is kind of hard to get sometimes. So I caution the scrolling, you know, make sure that users can actually use it. You almost always need a mouse or something like that, you know, so just watch those kind of things.
Yeah. My grandma has a hard time with one level of scrolling. I don't know what would happen.
Yeah, let alone two or three or whatever. Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we've got here. So once again, I'm going to collapse that CSS and show you just the JavaScript. That's kind of what we're interested in right now. So let's find that cheeseburger element, and let's say on scroll, I want this to happen. What do I want to happen? I simply want to do a console log, so we better open the console. Here's our console, and I'm going to reset it. And I'm going to rerun this, and then I'm going to scroll. Boop. And as I scroll, you see that it says scrolling the cheeseburger div the whole time I'm scrolling. Every time this moves one little tiny bit, I get an event fire.
That's a lot of events.
It's a ton of events. Look at that.
So what happens when all kind of events like this fire?
Well, what do you mean what happens? I mean, they fire.
Well, they fire, but you can have it firing enough that it starts eating up some RAM, right?
Oh, yeah. You could have a hard time with this, yeah, certainly. It sounds like something that you've faced before.
Possibly.
I'm not saying it was anything I did, but
it was always someone else's code.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it before.
Yeah.
I've seen it before.
It's happened.
Okay, now, but this, like I mentioned, the scrolling is an event that you can use either on the individual element or on the whole page as a whole. And right now we're talking about browser events, so I just showed you the scroll event on a div, but really we're interested in when the whole page scrolls, right? So let's look at a different scroll bar. So if we scroll down just a little bit here, you see that I'm selecting the window. Now, did you mention this syntax here when you were talking about selectors?
No, I left that one out because that's selecting the whole window.
Yeah. Yep. Well, yeah, and it's interesting because in most of the selectors that we saw, what we were selecting was in quotes, right?
Yes, in quotes, an actual DOM element, but this time we're selecting the entire window. So it's the window object. There is no DOM element for that. It's the window.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting too because if I have a DOM element by other means, like if I say var my element equals document, I'm going to have to spell that right. Document, query selector, and I get it by its ID of Fred. Okay, now I have an actual DOM element, right?
Right.
Oops, yes, I do. Query selector does return an actual DOM element. So I have an actual DOM element. I can tell jQuery, hey, wrap this DOM element with my jQuery object. Even though it's not a CSS selector at all, it's just a DOM element, it says, that's cool, I'll go ahead and wrap that in a jQuery object.
So it'll take an object as well as a string, and that includes the window object. If you put it in double quotes, you could have maybe called something a window.
Yeah, right? That's right.
Or tried to make up a window element or something like that.
Yeah.
I do that all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, so the way to refer to the window object is simply to use window without any quotes in it. Window, okay? That gives us the window. The window, by the way, is the browser, okay? We call it window. We can't make any assumptions about what kind of browser, or to be even more abstract, what kind of user agent
right.
the user happens to be using, right?
We used to do that, and we ran into all kind of problems with it, and that's kind of why we even have jQuery in the first place, from that user agent sniffing and things like that. So we don't want to do that. We just want to say window, the browser, generic, not ever IE or Firefox or something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we've got this window. We use the on just like we do on the individual div elements. That's one of the nice things about it is that the syntax is identical. We want to capture the scroll function, and then here's the function that we actually want to give it, and we can name our event object so that we have that available to us. And now it says scrolling the page. So let's give this a try. I'll collapse my, I'm going to need that console, by the way. Now let me go ahead and rerun my pen, and now I'll scroll just a little bit here, a little bit, scrolling the cheeseburger div, and now I'll scroll the whole page, and it says scrolling the page. Okay, so it's differentiating between those two scrolls. And by the way, I know it looks like this is just an, let me highlight this, it looks like this is just an element on the page, but in fact, this is the Windows scroll bar. This is the primary scroll bar. This is, in fact, the way CodePen has this set up, is that this is, in fact, just an object with its own scroll bar. That could be confusing for sure. All right, so let me make sure we covered that. Well, we looked at some of it. We haven't finished it all, but we looked at the scrolling, and now let's look at the ability to capture errors. Oh, and the ability to capture the resize.
Oh, exception management.
Exception
management. That stuff we all got to do and nobody really wants to do, but we have to do it.
Yeah.
Exception management and instrumentation.
It's like the dishes.
Yeah, and so while you're getting that ready, so this question comes up a lot. People will ask, since we are actually controlling the browser at this point, people say, well, here's some other things I want to do. I want to be able to let somebody maybe download a document, and I want to be able to choose where on their system I should save it and run some stuff after it. Guess what the answer is to that? It's only yes or no, right? No.
Can I answer true or false?
False would be fine.
Right, false.
Yes, because you can't, right? That's a big security flaw. Would you ever want to allow a program to just choose a location on your system without your knowledge or to do the... No, you just can't do those things. So you get certain control over the browser, but you don't get any kind of full control. You can't just do whatever you want in the browser.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let me show you the chaining that I did here because it's interesting. I have done a little bit of slight rabbit trails, so I'm gonna move at a little bit swifter pace, but I wired up that scroll on the window. There's the dot on. Here's another dot on. This is just one format for putting all your chained events. I've just got a list of chained events all tied onto the same thing. So let me just show you this real quick. This resize, I'm wiring up this resize, and I'm saying in my console window, resizing the browser to, and then I specifically mention its new width and height. So you can see that it's been changed here. Let's go ahead and change this browser size altogether. I'll grab the corner, and you can see that as I move it, those numbers are changing here. They're getting smaller and smaller as I shrink that. So I have full control over that. And one final thing on the browser is the ability to capture the errors. So here's the errors. I have a throw button that throws an error. This is how you throw an error in JavaScript, plain old JavaScript. That's not a jQuery thing. I'm just throwing an error. But this error is going to capture it. And so now when I believe I put it at the top, throw an error, I get a break in my developer tools. But if I continue on that, you should see in my console that an error has occurred. That means that this event was caught, this function was caught, and I could do whatever I want to handle that exception there. Okay, let's look at document loading events. We looked at load, we looked at ready, and we have not really mentioned unload. I want to do this quickly since we have looked at it already, but I want to mention that load does affect the entire body. You can put body, you can attach to the body's load event to determine when the body was loaded. And You can also attach to the load of any individual specific controls. And it really is just when that control is done loading, but not entirely done loading in the case of the body. When you say body load, it is going to fire whenever the DOM is done. I said that backwards, I'm sorry. It is when it's entirely done. It's when the body is done and all of its content has been rendered within it. So if there are images in there, it's not going to fire until after all the images load. Versus ready, which is different in a lot of browsers, and so you should use the jQuery ready. And it's going to fire as soon as just the skeleton is ready. And then we could go start manipulating things if we want to.
Right.
So somebody asked about the difference between those. For the most part, for all the easy cases, for all the happy paths, you can just use ready. But there are some times when you want to do something only after images have come back and been fully loaded, and then you would tie up and use the load. So I'm going to skip that. Do you think I should skip that? Yeah, let's go ahead and skip that demo. And let's look directly at our form events. So our form events are quite a few. It's quite a few form events because these involve user interaction. So obviously there's going to be a lot of events. We've got change events when an element's value changes. Focus when an element receives focus. Blur if it loses its focus. I think that one's a little bit of a funny name.
Blur's not just a weird name, but quite frankly, focus and blur I'm not even a fan of at all.
Why is that?
Because of usability.
Okay.
And quite frankly, I do a lot with accessibility. And when you set the focus to something and then you're just worried about focus and unfocus, a lot of screen readers and assistive technology can't actually work correctly. So you're cutting out a lot of users who simply can't use your page because of bad usability.
That's awful.
Yep. It is.
Awful. Yeah, so focus and blur are not always advisable, but what is it? What's happened? When does a focus fire?
Well, the focus fires when some element receives the focus, and only one element can have the focus at a time, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because I might give an element the focus by clicking in it or tabbing to it, or it might happen programmatically. There's lots of different ways that an element can get a focus, and so it's nice that we have a focus event so that regardless of how the user got to it, it's going to fire. If I was counting on the fact that they clicked in there, well, what if they tabbed? It would just completely foil my plans.
Exactly. And then you end up with all that code of just watching whether they focused and blurred. Maybe we should just wait until the end and then do some summary validation or something
that.
Makes it a lot easier for the user.
Yeah. One really super big one, though, in the category of form events is the change event.
Yeah.
You imagine that if a user's typing some things or if he into a text box or if he changes a radio value or changes a drop-down list value, any of those things are going to fire a change event. And very often you want to do some stuff when the user adds some input or changes his input, right?
Right.
So let's take a look at these ones.
Yeah, change is a nice happy event
or
method to use.
Okay, so I don't currently have a pen for these ones, so I'm going to show you how to use CodePen to create one. So I'm going to hit fork. I'm going to fork my own pen here. That sounds funny, I think, to people behind the cameras, right?
I'm going to fork
my pen.
Is it a fork or a pen?
So now it's actually a new pen now, and so I'm going to go change this, and I'm going to call this my form events and save the details. I'm now working on a new pen called form events. This is now available to all of you in cyberspace using this address or simply by going to codepen.io/codefoster and then finding mine. It's however not yet in the right collection. To do that, you go down here to the bottom and you say, I want to add this to the introduction to jQuery collection, and now it's been added. So super simple. I like this. Okay, so form events. Let's go ahead and set this up now. I'm not going to debug. I'm going to go ahead and reset all of this, and I'm going to just make myself an input of type text, and I'm going to give it the ID of my input. There it is. I don't need any CSS, and in fact, I'll just kill that. And for my JavaScript, let's just go ahead and kill all that, and let's go ahead and save it and run it. So there we are. I've got myself a text box, right? Whoa, I can type whatever I want in there. Well, I could certainly affect the focus for whenever I get out of this text box. In fact, let me add myself another text box just so I have something to tab to. So that I can illustrate my point here. If I'm in the first one and I hit tab, that was not tab, and I hit tab, I go to the next one, right? Well, let's see about getting focus to happen here and change and see what happens in both of those cases. So how would I uniquely identify this first event here, Rachel, so that I can select it with jQuery?
Well, you could go ahead and grab your input type that you have there. Just do it by the ID is fine, and then you can go ahead and just tell it on click or on, not your click, but your focus or blur, and then.
Okay, so I could do it that way, right?
Yep.
And that's gonna get both of them, right?
So far.
Yeah, so
you
far.
You can do an ID selector and.
Let's do that. Let's just do the ID selector and get that one. There we go. Now I'm uniquely identifying one of them, right?
Yep.
Okay, so let's tell him I want something to happen whenever he changes. Now, first of all, there's the JavaScript way of doing this, which is this, right?
On change, yep.
Would that work right now?
Not necessarily. I mean, that's a selector. It might.
Well, this is a
that's
jQuery object,
That's a jQuery
object,
selector
right?
with a JavaScript.
So I would have to do that to get down to the JavaScript object,
right.
And then I could do that. But that's not necessary. We've got jQuery here. Let's use it. So we'll use on. There you go. Change. And then the function that we want to fire. I just don't have nearly enough space to work here. There we go. The function that we want to fire, remember that I can capture the arguments by doing that. And then in here, I do need a semicolon at the end there, if I'm option explicit. So what I write inside this block is going to happen whenever it changes. So let's just say console log change happens. The only constant is change. Let's get metaphysical. And there it is. Now I want to do something else whenever, for this same value, this same element, whenever I focus or blur. So should I just do this again?
You could.
It would work. Probably be better, however, to chain.
Chain.
Huh? There we go. There's that. Now I'm chaining. Now focus. Focus, everybody. There we go, and do technically need a semicolon there. And what do I want to happen? Well, let's just keep it simple. Let's say focus is important. There we go. So there's change and focus. Let's go ahead and run these, and if everything works correctly, then when I click in here and I type the letter A, are you ready?
Yeah.
A, oh, I guess it would help if I had my console
tools
up, wouldn't it? And it looks like I'm gonna get an error, isn't it? Okay, so B, oh, that's not happening, is it? But if I tab, the only constant is change. I did get that. Now let me tab back. Focus isn't, this is not actually working the way that I expected it to. So I would expect my input, whenever it changes, no, I did that right. This is gonna get tied up right away so that whenever it changes, I'm gonna log this. And whenever focus happens, I'm gonna log that. Let's try this again. I'm gonna hit save in case you guys wanna follow along at home. You can grab it right now. Let's clear the console. Okay, I'm running it. I'm clicking inside here. Okay, I got focus. That makes sense. And now I tap A. A. And I'm not getting my change. Oh, I know why. I think the change is happening differently than I'm expecting. Does change happen after every keystroke?
It should.
I don't think it does. I think it happens after the value has been changed.
Let me double check.
Yeah, why don't you double check for me? I think if I want to capture every keystroke, I'm going to have to do another event, which is the key up or key down, which we're going to get
something
to in
like
a second.
That.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember all
I know,
of them.
It
that's
is.
Why we have the documentation.
That's right. I was thinking that change was happening per keystroke, but I don't think it does. I think it only happens
it
after I tab out of there. So, but the focus is happening as I would expect. When I get out of there, blur would occur. When I click back in there, blur would happen again. Okay, we've got just two more short sections here, and they're actually very easy, so we don't have to worry about the fact that we're already a little bit over time here. They are key down, press, and up. It is important that you know the difference between, for instance, key down and key up, or key up and key press? You know, what's the subtle difference between these? Well, the key down and key up are super easy and they work the same on every browser. Key press is one of those areas where it's really different per browser and it's kind of a pain point. So it's nice to do it in jQuery again because it's abstracting it for you. Did you figure it out?
Yeah. So it is after it just changes.
Okay. So it's after you get out of it.
So, cool. Yeah. And then so the key presses, so you'll pretty much always just have one key up, right?
Yeah.
But you'll have a key down and that can happen multiple times and maybe multiple key presses.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, depending on your keyboard settings, you might do a key down and then get a key press on a repeated...
Repeat key press.
Repeat key press. And then finally one key up at the end.
Yeah.
And you might want it to act differently. Sometimes you want something to take effect as soon as they touch the button. And other times, if they hold it for a little while, you want to give them an opportunity to change their mind. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, let's try this real quick. Let's do a key up. We're going to handle that on the input. And we're going to console. We're capturing that EV, remember. And we're going to console EV.which. Remember, that's which key got pressed. So now let's run it. I'll go ahead and save it for you guys, clear it, and then click here, press D, and I got 68. Press R, and I got 82. Okay, so we're getting that which in there. There is, by the way, a better property inside that event object that instead of giving you 68, it'll give you the letter D or the letter R or whatever letter you actually pressed. I tend to use that one just because then I don't have to do a char translation. Okay, and then the last set of events that I'm going to talk about is the mouse events. There are quite a few of them, but they're quite easy. With your mouse, a person can mouse over something. They can move their mouse in, move it out. They can click down with a button, up with a button. They can also hover, and they can also double-click. There's all these different things that they can do with their mouse, and they all pretty much work exactly the same way with these mouse events. Now, you can tie them up just exactly like I have with these other ones, and then you can go console out the event arguments, take a look at what those give you, but I think it's going to be pretty intuitive what it is that each of these events gives you. I don't think we need to enumerate those.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, it's usually just either which mouse button, the coordinates of where it was clicked, or if you're doing Shift, Control, Alt, something like that.
Yeah. I think everybody should be aware, however, that in the browser there are some competing models right now for handling touch. There's one really good model called the pointer events that IE implements. It's currently not implemented elsewhere, so it's a little bit like, I don't know, you know, but it's a standard.
Right.
But the nice thing about it is it abstracts away the pointer type. It abstracts away whether you're using a mouse or a pen or your finger. And it's able to capture like all your fingers, you know, like if you have multi-point touch. So it's really nice and you can use it if you know what browser you're going to be in. But otherwise, you just have to pull your hair out. I think that's the only option. Cool. Okay, well, that's about it for events. Let me make sure I've got everything. We covered attachment, the event object, and then various categories of events, the browser, document loading, form, keyboard, mouse. There's lots of them, but they all use the same exact pattern, and that's nice for us as developers. And that covers the concept of events and covers this module. So anything you want to add?
No, I think we get it all.
There you go. All right, let's go ahead and take a 10-minute break, and we'll see you at the top of the next one.
See you in a bit.